Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Dr. Natalie Bellini, and Dr. Diana Isaacs, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases, with a focus on leveraging technology to improve diabetes care. Produced by HCP Live Endocrinology, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on hcplive.com.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. We are once again live at the ADCES Technology Conference in Chicago. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I am with my co-host, Natalie Bellini, and we have two guests with us this time. We have Jennifer Okima and Gary Scheiner. Gary's actually my co-chair at this conference, so that's great. But these two have really innovative businesses, actually, around being a certified diabetes care and education specialist. So if I could have each of you kind of just introduce yourselves and a little bit about your role and what you do.
Go ahead.
My name is Jennifer Okima. I'm a registered dietitian, board certified advanced diabetes management and CDCES and certified sports nutritionist. And I have a private practice in the Seattle area. I have three brick and mortar clinics and telehealth, which I've been doing before telehealth was cool, since 2018. So we slid right into everything telehealth as soon as COVID hit. An easy transition for us. We have 14 employees. We have five clinicians, registered nurse diabetes care education specialists, registered dietitians, and a nurse practitioner, and then our ancillary support staff in billing and office administration. And we are an insurance-based practice with concierge services on top of that. And in addition to that, we have clinic contracts with all of the device companies that allow us to do device and technology training all over the country, not just within the state.
Awesome.
That's pretty much it.
That's it?
Great.
And we're growing fast.
Right.
I don't know.
We should
say now. First.
Gary Scheiner, a certified diabetes care and education specialist, and started a practice back in 95. I worked at the Joslin Clinic for a while before that, and just saw this gap in terms of what, you know, mainly in type 1 patients needed, and also anybody using intensive insulin therapy just needed some additional guidance than what they were getting from their current physicians and healthcare teams. So it's grown over the years. I have a staff of 9 clinicians now. And they're all over the country because we started doing virtual care back in 2004. My kids taught me about Skype, and from there it just kind of took off doing the virtual services. So now probably about 80-85% of our service is virtual. We work primarily with patients with type 1 diabetes, type 2s on intensive insulin therapy. So we're heavy into the technologies. And you know, kind of goal focused. So we work with patients on whatever their particular goals are, helping them manage their diabetes better, weight loss, training for athletics, getting through pregnancy successfully, you know, whatever their specific areas of interest might be. So it's a very satisfying form of work. Unlike when Jennifer is able to provide services through insurance, it's been exclusively private pay for the last 27 years. And surprisingly and luckily for us, our patients are willing to pay up for the service. I guess we're able to give them a lot more than they can otherwise get on their own. But we've always been really flexible. So we have our standard set of fees, but we'll work with people off whatever they can afford. We've had people pay us in baked goods. If they're good cookies, we had someone send us a pound cake that is just out of this world. That earned them 3 months of care.
Never had an insurance company send me pound cake.
Great.
See, change.
You might change your whole way. Right.
You might say, well, the money they send you, you could buy your own pound cake.
Could do that.
But this was real.
So I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that would love to start a business, like maybe not exactly your business, but do something like that. But I imagine I don't know, there's a lot of challenges to get started. Like, how did you do it? How did you get started?
Well, it's, I recommend a hybrid approach, trying to dive in head first, 100% on your own practice. You're going to struggle. It's going to take years to build up. How many years did it take until you were above water in terms of
practice? I practiced my model under the shareholder corporation of an endocrinology clinic that I worked at. And I worked at that place for 5 years. And I started out with me, ended up being 9 educators, 6 offices, and I knew my model would work. So I jumped ship and went straight into private practice. It wasn't without bumps and bobbles, and I swear I fail at everything before I succeed, and I just keep going. But I had to be willing to take the risk, and it was a huge risk. I just know my referring providers. I know my area. The hardest thing was that I started this the year before COVID hit, and that was great. We had a building practice. It started out with just me, and I just keep building as I go. But we lost contact with all of our referring providers during that time. And that's my relationships with the people in the state and wherever is what brought patients to us, because people refer out of their systems directly to us on purpose. So I lost that contact. But it's risky.
I had contract work to do when I got started. I had project work for pharmaceutical companies and device manufacturers, and that helped pay the bills until the clientele built up. So now, I'm at a point where as the clientele builds up and we get busy enough, I can add more staff. So that's how things keep growing.
I do the same thing. As I don't bring on a staff member with an empty calendar. And I make sure that we can support that staff member first with a number of referrals. Then I bring somebody on, and then they're immediately being able to see patients. The hard part for me, and one of the connecting reasons of why I do whatever I can in ADCES, is I need qualified educators. And I'm really, really picky on who I bring on board, because they have to be able to meet our patients where they're at. They have to be able to guide them through coaching and not speak to them in ways that they may have been taught. They've got to really have a natural approach with understanding the goals of the patient. And we say that in our practice, that when somebody walks into our door, it's our job to learn their diabetes. It's not their job to come to our system of tear off sheets and whatever. So it's hard to find those people. And if there's anything I can do and make diabetes educators better and more challenging and be able to meet the needs of our patients, that's what I would like to do.
And this is one thing I've learned over the years when it comes to hiring, is to not hire based on skill set.
Right.
To hire based on personality.
Personality and ability to and wanting to learn. I would rather have that employee that wants to learn, wants to be mentored.
Yeah, you can teach skills.
Yeah.
Can't
so give me staff. give me one of your disaster stories of hiring somebody that didn't work out, because I've got one too.
I hired a nurse who had all the credentials and had diabetes personally. But she was a bit of a fanatic. Just the personalities clashed, not only with the rest of our staff, but with the patients as well. And you can't fix that. You can fix skills, and you can't really fix a personality that conflicts with.
And when it's your private practice and the name, people know you, they know Gary Shiner. And when it's your practice, it matters so much more, because a lot of times people think they're going to come and see me, but I have very highly qualified staff that they're under very good care, but they think they're going to see me all the time, but it's still my name. So I hired a diabetes care education specialist. She was an RD who was a friend of mine and told me that, oh yeah, I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. Turns out she can't do anything. She did not know even how to chart on the patient, did not know anything about intensive diabetes care. She was a friend of mine. And I had to let her go, which was a little sticky. I mean, we preserved the friendship, because it really just came down to, this isn't working for anybody. But it was hard to do.
Another criterion is I like people who have that personal connection. I've taken to hiring people who either have kids with diabetes, who have diabetes themselves, a spouse, so that they can lend that extra passion. It's kind of like in that movie Spinal Tap, where they can turn the amp up to 11 and just get to that next level and really provide a special level of care for the patient.
I think also compassion for taking care of people with diabetes and just understanding that if you have functioning beta cells and you're working with people who don't, this isn't every day, every minute, all these decisions that they have to make, and giving the most amount of space and respect for that without being demanding and without being, direct and saying, this is what you have to do. I think the language that we use and the support, if we can do anything and we do it right, it's to take, to just, I just want to lift weight off of people. I just want to lift it off of them so that they leave our office going, okay, I have somebody on my team. And we always thank them for allowing us on the team. They don't have to come to see us. They can go anywhere they want, but we thank them for that.
I love that. And so speaking of team, I'm kind of curious, how do you work with a person with diabetes, like the rest of their healthcare team? Like, do you ever get any, you know, is there ever any friction, or do you, like, how is the communication? How does that work?
Sometimes with primary care, they're so protective of their patients, but they're so overwhelmed at the same time, and they do not know diabetes well, but they're still very protective. So there's a learning curve that we have to prove ourselves with those providers. And I know those steps to take. I know those baby steps that I need to take to make sure my notes document every calculation, even though it's mind-numbing because I'm so used to doing it. But I want all of my staff, because we are educators for our providers as well as our patients. So when they read and see what we do, what we know, I have a set of protocols that if they refer people into it, we can adjust their insulin if they sign the protocol. But we're not the prescribers. We know our place, we know where we're at, but if we create a story for that patient on that patient's behalf to get them CGM, to get them a GLP-1, and we send that to the provider, you'd have to be an idiot to ignore it, because we do our job so well. But it takes a long time to get there with new providers. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that dance. It never bothers me. It irritates the rest of my staff because they just want to scream, like, why can't we just tell them they need to be on insulin? Because that's not how it works. You need to earn your right on that team. And once we have that, it is amazing how these doctors will say, go see Jennifer's team. I don't know. I don't care. I don't know. I mean, not that I don't care about you, but they know what they're doing, and we share our notes with them. So that works out quite well, but it has to be earned.
And how about for you, Gary?
I would say, if you asked me the same question 10 or 15 years ago, there was a lot of pushback from the patient's physicians. Most patients come to us directly. They're not being referred by their physician. The problem is their physician's not providing the care they need. They come to us for the extra service, the extra level of treatment and recommendations and so on. There was pushback then, and physicians didn't like anyone else kind of interfering with their patient care. But we got to a point where we just said, all right, well, we'll communicate with you. And, you know, if you decide to take our recommendations, fine. If not,
do you do that? Like, do you provide any kind of summary, like, for the person to bring back to their, I guess, endo or physician?
Well, we'll send a direct note to the physician.
Okay.
If the patient requests it, or if they were referred. But otherwise, we consider ourselves direct consultants to the patient. If the patient chooses to share what we're doing together with their physician, that's up to them. If they want us to communicate with their team, their physician and their team, we do that. So we put the patient in charge. They kind of dictate.
I mean, I would imagine with now, like, there being all these different AID systems and different settings that you can adjust, like, probably the healthcare teams are very happy to get that help to get their patients to vote.
Right.
Right, just don't have the bandwidth to do it. They're just happy that somebody who knows what they're doing is helping the patient.
And then I think too, when you interact with the patient and then they come back to their provider, whether that's a physician, an advanced practice provider, and their numbers are more in range, they're happier. They say, I went to this support group. I mean, I know you run support groups on top of it. I've been to your support groups. And they say, I feel better. I feel better. I feel less burdened. I feel less diabetes distress. It's a whole system. It's not just come and see me. I'm going to change your insulin to carbohydrate ratio and improve your outcomes. That's not what you guys do. So I think that's a really big part of it. You're managing and helping the patient learn to manage all aspects. What about exercise? What about diet? What about, you know, your, I always sleep patterns, yeah. You know, we have, do you have sleep apnea? Are you being treated for it?
What's your sleep quality?
You have a bad shoulder and they gave you an injection and they said, what? Yeah. They said your blood sugars might go up for a day, yeah, right? Like, and you say, you let, right, exactly. Right. It'll be fine. Don't worry. It's not that long. Well, in their lifetime, it's not long, but in that 2 weeks where they're high the whole time, it's long for that patient.
Yeah. The big problem is still only 1 out of 10 people with diabetes ever works with a diabetes care and education specialist.
And when they come to us, they say, I didn't even know you guys existed. I had no idea that this was a thing. Where have you been? So they don't even know that we're there.
And they say, yeah, one session and they say, I learned more in this hour than I did in the last 10 years.
Yes.
Right. And is that because they've been told, I mean, I think we all, you know, in endocrinology as an endocrine nurse practitioner, the, you know, patients come back and forth to different providers. And then one day they sit with you and they say, I'm ready to listen now, which is different than no one's ever told me. Right. Because I know that if they've seen Gary, Gary has told them that, but yeah, they weren't ready to listen 2 years ago when Gary said that. Now they're ready because they went, not that Diana or I or you is more magical, but at that time in their lives.
I think that does happen.
Right.
I think also, especially with type one and as type one coming to a registered dietitian, we have a different, they don't want to come and see us because they've had bad experiences. They old time care of type one with seeing the dietitian. It makes me cringe that's what our field was. I know it's not that. If it is that way anymore, then I need to know names. I'm going to take some names down because that's not
lectured.
Yeah. That's lectured. And about something so personal as food that you are for the rest of your life, it's going to haunt you in some way. And talk about disordered eating and other issues that go on with that. So I think as a registered dietitian, I purposely and professionally train other RD, CDCES is to not talk about food. And it's hard because it's our training, but you didn't earn that yet. You don't know anything about the person. They didn't ask you anything about food. So use all of your other role as a diabetes care and education specialist until that time happens.
You know, the diabetes care specialist, first and foremost, has to be a good listener. That's
what?
Lacking. You gotta be a good listener. You have to learn, understand the person that you're sitting with and understand where they're coming from, what their goals are, what their conceptions or misconceptions are.
And fears.
Before you can do anything to help.
Absolutely.
Them. And we have to be multidisciplinary. Each one of us has to be a little bit of a nutritionist and an exercise specialist and a nurse. And a mental health counselor and a sleep specialist.
And a pharmacist.
We have to have a little of all of those people.
In your roles, how do you help a person maybe identify what would be the optimal technology for them, especially with all the different options now?
We have a petting zoo. We call it a petting zoo.
Oh, tell me more about this petting
we
zoo.
We just throw all the devices on the table and we have a petting zoo and we're like this. Right. And then they just get to touch and feel everything and they can ask questions. And
is this done like in a group or is it?
It's done individually and it's done in a group. So we haven't brought the group classes back, but it's definitely done individually. So you want to talk technology? We just start taking toys out and just saying what's interesting and what resonates with you. We don't have the conversation of insurance until the very end.
And I am so in agreement with you.
Yes,
I
feel like that's but we don't bring it up thing. At all because we just talk about whatever. This is there. And I actually feel like a used car salesman sometimes because we set everything out. And I'm like, well, the features and benefits of this, blah, 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 and the limitations. But as a diabetes care and education specialist in technology, we're taught the benefits and the features of every product. But if we don't know the limitations and if we cannot objectively say that this is a limitation of this product, then we're missing a huge piece of information for our patients.
I think a lot of that comes from personal experience with the products. I'm sure you've tried all the devices, yes, even without having diabetes. And Diana, you were saying the same earlier.
I put caffeine.
You put everything on.
I'm trying to get Natalie's Eversense on me. So hopefully that's going to even happen soon.
Right. On caffeine.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Not today, not today, but in the future.
Right. I put espresso in my pods, and I just have a basal rate in Seattle. I just bolus my caffeine.
That's a really good idea.
Well, that's what I tell when we cure type 1 diabetes, we're going to use all these devices for like some serious.
Next time, try the Red Bull.
Red Bull. Give me a Red Bull and in a loop.
It might clog the cannula.
Get you a bigger cannula.
Like a straw.
You know, having intimate knowledge of these devices is the only way, because you do have to consider the drawbacks or the limitations of each system as well. And when you know your patient, if you know your client and what their interests are, their goals, their lifestyle is like, I think we can do a much better job then of steering them towards what's going to work best. But I agree, you've got to let the patient decide, because ultimately they're the ones who are going to use it. We can give them information, though, that'll help them make a better decision, maybe an educator.
I have I don't know that it's teaching, it's more facilitating, but I do a talk in Seattle with our type 1 summit. So everybody in the audience is type 1, which is really fun when you're up front talking and things are beeping everywhere and everybody's grabbing their body and like, cause there's beeps everywhere. Everyone knows something's going. Yeah. Yeah. Just as a speaker and seeing that out in the audience is kind of a unique situation, but I teach this thing called Damn These Devices. And the Damn These Devices is modeled after, everybody has a green card and a red card. And we go through the devices one at a time. And we have a scribe that writes all of these things down. But they're allowed to raise their card, red or green, and say something positive or negative about a device. But the only requirement is they had to have used the device, because I don't want to hear anything from someone who's never used the device. So we write down the pros and cons of every single product. And at the end of that, barring the promise of a cure at some point, we build our own device. So it's not me, and it's not my experience, and it's not an end sample of one, which I think can be an issue in care of diabetes. I have a couple of type 1 care providers who have to come out of their own diabetes to be able to take care of other people in a more expansive way. But the end product of what this room comes up with Damn These Devices, is pretty fascinating.
Wow. And do you have like a diverse group that like has been on a lot of different
everything programs? Everything that I'll just say, okay, now we're going to talk about smart pens, now we're going to talk about, you know, whatever product it is. We go through every single product, and we have it, and it's kind of timed, because the people can, you know, complain or comment on anything. And one time I did this, we had some of the device companies were in the room, because they had kind of sort of an expo in the room type of thing. And I told them ahead of time, you're going to hear stuff you don't want to hear, or that you're going to hear stuff you should hear. But it's what people like and disliked about their products. It's very revealing.
Well, I think that really comes back to, there is no one product for every patient, right? Yeah. There is also no one patient experience, right? So, you know, you can think to yourself as a clinician, you have these three things, you do this. So I really think this pump is going to be best for you, or this AID system. And, you know, I've had patients choose different ones than I thought would be best, and it worked out better for them. But I've also had patients choose, you know, steer them a little differently because of their job or something else that they need to have, you know, specific things or not, you know.
Right.
And so I think that there is some sense that you're not just really putting everything out and saying pick, because then you go, well, let me help this.
Yeah.
You need a smartphone for this. Exactly. You need an app.
Insurance companies need to hear that as well. So they think a pump is a commodity. It's a pump.
Right.
A sensor,
cover this one.
A meter.
Right. Yes.
And they're just not.
Right.
There are differences. And to take the person making that decision at the insurance plan and say, what kind of car do you drive?
Right.
And say, did you just go out and buy a car? Or do you pick a certain type of car?
Right. Yeah. So we are used car salesmen.
Yeah. People have preferences. There are features that apply well to different different situations.
But we also have people that it's not, you know, I talk about pump therapy too, is that it's not something that, it, in my opinion, you have to earn. You have to have your blood sugars in control to have, like, how many times have our patients been told that? A lot. And it's not something you have to have either. It's something that can be a tool. It can be something that can help you. But I've got a couple of patients that have had type one forever and they never want to go on a pump.
Oh, I have lots. And I mean, not even a couple, right?
And I want them, right. And I want them to make that decision based on that. That is their choice. But I do want to push a little bit and say, what is the reasoning behind that?
Or make sure it is a choice and it's just because no one ever.
Or fear or something. And a couple people have gone to pump therapy because they had the wrong information, but they said, I'm never going on a pump, and they're totally loving their pump. But then the ones that don't want to.
The ones that really fight technology, a lot of times it's a fear of change more than anything. It's not a specific thing about the technology. It's just they've been doing things a certain way for so long. They're comfortable. They don't want to change. But we know in our hearts and our minds that it would really help them make their lives much better. That's when I use sampling. I try to encourage them to sample things. Tell them, listen, you're not going on a pump. You're going to try a pump for 2 weeks or a week. And most of the time,
it's a test drive.
It is a test drive.
All right. Well, this has been an amazing conversation. I want to thank you both so much for joining us and spending some time with us here. It's been a great conference, Gary. And thank you all for tuning in to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue.
Thank you.